Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa Credit Card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime Secured Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime. Feels like progress.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
My fellow Americans, welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I would be delighted to have you. I am going to talk about a broad topic here now that is not particularly relevant to the major headlines of the day, but is. Go through a back door on this issue because I also saw this and I actually find it thoroughly hilarious. I have a copy of Cards Against Humanity. Cards Against Humanity is a really funny game and it is thoroughly inappropriate. So Cards Against Humanity is someone throws down a black card, which is you fill in the blank. And so here is, so for example, one of them is, oh no, here it comes. Oh gosh, it's blank. And the options are smallpox blankets, Ronald Reagan, holding a pepper grinder for some reason, a good strong gorilla. These are some of the options. And you throw down the cards to answer the black card that is the whatever blank. And then you throw down the other cards, and whoever has the funniest card wins the round. And there are some deeply, 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 deeply inappropriate cards. So much so that I can't even begin to read them on this program. You can get a sense of it if you go to their website. I will tell you this to begin with, for you scolds out there, because there are a lot of scolds out there. It's not a game for everyone. I have a dark and morbid sense of humor shared by and honestly inherited from my father. I find some of this deeply inappropriate humor to be deeply funny humor. And y'all just need to know that about me. And if you can't listen to me because of it, I'm sorry. But I personally, like, I don't have good friends in church to play Cards Against Humanity with, because it's really not the sort of game you play with a lot of friends in church, because it's not good for your sanctification, or someone could question you, but oh my gosh, it can be very funny. Someone has come out with a competitor, Cards Against Christians, and it's not nearly as funny, and it's basically come up with by Christians to get rid of the really, really bad, really bad. Hang on, I got to close the website because I'm seeing some of the cards come up. But there's a point to describing this game for you. You can buy packs, add-on packs, because once you played it for a while, you keep getting the same results, it loses some of the humor, so you can update it with new packs. Keep in mind, Cards Against Humanity is a game designed to push buttons and to be offensive. One of the cards, for example, is, I mean, it makes jokes about, you name the inappropriate topic, rape, makes jokes about rape. Murder, makes jokes about murder, makes jokes about abortion. Every off topic that you're not allowed to laugh about, the card game is designed to make you laugh about that topic. There's something about comedy and humor. Well, they've designed a Jew pack. J-E-W, Jew pack. Now, you should know that all of the writers of the pack are Jewish. They got a bunch of Jewish comedians together to design a pack for Cards Against Humanity, and they're calling it the Jew Pack. Well, people who love the offensive humor that mocks Christians and mocks special needs kids and mocks Jews and mocks every other category, apparently they have found the bridge too far. Because one of the cards, remember, you ask a question. I am a radio show host and part of my job is blank. And then you throw down cards, whichever one gives you the funniest line. Well, one of the cards in the pack to fill in the blank is destroying your rear end, we shall say, like a Palestinian village. That's right, destroying your butt like a Palestinian village, except it doesn't say butt. That's one of the cards that is in the Jew pack. People who love the abortion humor and the anti-Christian humor and the humor about kids with special needs riding short buses. Oh, it's a bridge too far to make a joke about destroying your rear end like a Palestinian village. How dare the Jews mock the Palestinian villages? Okay. I bring this up to make a larger point. You know, not everybody has the same sense of humor. Mine tends to be dark and rather morbid. Doesn't play well on radio sometimes. Particularly also being someone who's pretty open about my faith. My goodness, the church ladies have a fit over my sense of humor. You know, there are vague suggestions that St. Paul could have a good dark humor moment. Pretty sure Jesus could laugh at a joke. Some people in church cannot, but it's not just them. It's progressives. You know, it's so progressives came up with the idea that humor cannot punch down. What does it even mean? What does it mean? Humor cannot punch down. This comes, of course, from the intersectional wokes that you have the oppressor and the oppressed, and if you punch towards the oppressed, you're punching down. Dave Chappelle has talked about this, that by telling jokes about the transgender community, he's punching down because he is a cisgendered heterosexual black male, so therefore he is technically part of an oppressed class, but he's wealthy. So he's less oppressed than a transgender poor person. So by making a joke about a transgender person, he is punching down. Humor is humor. It doesn't matter the direction in which it punches. I know some great Helen Keller jokes. Humor is humor, regardless of the direction of the punch. But it might not make you laugh. And in the past, people would say, well, this isn't my cup of tea. And now they try to get the person fired. So my buddy Braden, he's got a suggestion for me for my birthday, is that I should rent like a comedy club and confiscate everybody's cell phones. Because, you know, a lot of comedians do this now. Yeah, particularly if they're also doing streaming shows, is you go to these venues and they confiscate all your phones. Everybody goes in, you're searched, and your phone is placed in a bag that you can't unlock the bag during your time at the venue, and then it's unlocked afterwards. My son and I went to John Mulaney, and they did that there. They put our phones in a bag, and you weren't allowed to get your phone out of the bag. They unlocked the bag afterwards. And so anyway, my buddy Brain was saying, I should just stand on stage and tell all the stories that I'm not allowed to tell, all the stories that I shouldn't tell, and say all the things I want to say that I would get fired if I said on live radio. And it would actually, boy, do I have some stories I can't tell y'all on radio. But inevitably, there would be people who would get offended with some of the stories, as there are, because you can't laugh. Everybody doesn't have the sense of, same sense of humor anymore. And progressives and even some people on the right now have decided that everybody's got to laugh together at the same things. And that's not really humor. In fact, I kind of think that it is a role of a comedian and the people who do Cards Against Humanity to laugh at the things you're not supposed to laugh at, to find humor in the things you're not supposed to find humor with, because it broadens the landscape of humor. It stretches out both sides of the so-called Overton window, and yet we've got moral scolds out there who just don't think anything is funny. You're just not allowed to laugh anymore. You know, one of my favorite cartoons ever was The Far Side. I love The Far Side. My dad introduced me to The Far Side as a kid. And y'all all know the picture of the school for the gifted, where the kid is trying to push the door open and it says pull. Little things like that. Humor is humor, and not everybody has it. It's like, let's take the Helen Keller jokes. You're not supposed to tell jokes about Helen Keller because, you know, she was blind and she was deaf, but she was also a commie who supported eugenics and was a horrible, horrible person. She's from Alabama and supported communists. I'm perfectly fine telling Helen Keller jokes. I told my preacher a great joke yesterday I heard. He was telling me bad dad jokes. By the way, do y'all know the answer to this question? What, friends, what do you call a black man on the moon? Any idea? What do you call a black man on the moon? An astronaut, you racists. Listen, it doesn't work for everyone. Someone out there right now is offended. The moral of the story here, beyond Cards Against Humanity putting up a card that I found deeply hilarious, so much so I was like, oh, I got to talk about this on radio, is the larger issue in our society today, where there is a, on both sides, it's not just progressives. There's a progressive wing on the right these days as well, a reactionary wing, the horseshoe theory at work, where we are to conform ourselves to a shared sense of tribal humor, so you can't tell jokes inside the house. You on the right, you're not supposed to tell jokes about Donald Trump. You on the left, you're not supposed to tell jokes about progressive wokes. You're not supposed to do it, which means the rest of us should tell those jokes. We should poke fun at our own sides. You know what the shibboleth is? The shibboleth is a story from the Old Testament where the Jews crossed the Jordan River. And they're being pursued by the enemy. And the men guarding the side of the Jordan River, on Israel's side of the Jordan River, they ask everyone coming across the river to say the word shibboleth. Because the people pursuing the Israelites couldn't make the sh sound. They said sibboleth, not shibboleth. And if you said sibboleth instead of shibboleth, they cut you down with the sword. It has taken on the moniker of a word that you have to say or you can't say or is part of your tribal identity. These shibboleths are part of your tribal identity. We should all be laughing at our tribal identities. Republicans should be willing to laugh at Republicans. Democrats should be willing to laugh at Democrats. Everyone should be willing to laugh at Helen Keller. And everyone should be willing to laugh at Cards Against Humanity coming up with a JUPAC and the absurd, somewhat offensive responses to the PAC. But people would rather be angry and upset than just live and let live and decide that because they don't find it funny, you can't find it funny. And in those situations, we should all be more willing to laugh at them for lacking a sense of humor.
When the world seems crazy, he'll keep you sane. It's the Eric Erickson Show.
Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. I love this one. This is hilarious. So we got to set the stage here because I think this is hilarious. Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to vacate the chair to oust the Speaker of the House. She filed her motion to oust the Speaker of the House because the Speaker had to rely on Democrat votes to pass what they're calling the minibus, the spending appropriations legislation to keep the government open. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene hasn't been a fan of the spending packages, this one or the others. What I find hilarious is that she has had a press release bragging about all the earmarks she's been getting for her district from the spending appropriations that everybody seems to hate. Marjorie Taylor Greene secures federal funding for 7 community projects in Northwest Georgia. That's from the previous package from March. But my goodness, willing to get up the earmarks, but then oust the Speaker for having to work with the Democrats to keep the government open. By the way, her motion, apparently she's pausing it. It's not going to be advanced right now. The reality is the Republicans in the House are furious, even the hardcore conservatives, because they don't have the votes now. If this was successful, it would hand Hakeem Jeffries the leadership of the House of Representatives, and it's for Mike Johnson to stay in power. He'll have to rely on the Democrats, making him more beholden to Democrats. It was just such a dumb move to make by Marjorie Taylor Greene, this impulsiveness to be the star and get the attention, and it's failing. I mean, you essentially have now strategically put the Speaker of the House in a position where he'll be beholden to Democrats and moderate Republicans, or you try to find a way to get the conservative groups to come in and work with him to find ways to control the spending. The problem with the populist wing of the party now, the Matt Gaetz of the world, the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, is they confuse tactics and strategy. They engage in a series of small ball tactics constantly that they can fundraise off of, send out their press release and say, look at me, look at me, look what I did, look at me. And it doesn't actually have an overarching strategy to accomplish anything other than raise money for them. The grifters in the Republican Party are going to be the end of the Republican Party. It's just so obvious that we are a party being run at this point by a lot of clowns who just want to make money. And it doesn't matter whether they're in the majority or minority, as long as they can fundraise. Now, one of the great groups pushing back on this sort of stuff and educating people and building up people's appreciation for the uniqueness of the American experiment is Hillsdale College. And they would love to have you experience one of Hillsdale's great programs with Victor Davis Hanson. It's a series of lectures you can take a class on citizenship, its decline in the United States, and how we can revitalize citizenship in the United States. It's so worth it. Hillsdale College has been educating Americans for years. Do you know Hillsdale College was the first college in the country to integrate and the first college in the country to allow women to get 4-year degrees? And they have been an institution committed to equality and an institution committed to American exceptionalism since their founding. They love this country and its uniqueness, and they want you to be a part of it with this great class from Victor Davis Hanson on citizenship, its decline and revitalization. All you do is go to ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. Go sign up with Hillsdale College today at ericforhillsdale.com.
Smart, fearless, and occasionally funny. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. to the phones on a topic I have not done justice to and have been meaning to all week. So I'm glad he's calling about this. Tommy, you're up next. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Eric. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Eric, I am blessed with a wonderfully gifted child, as are you. And congratulations on your daughter going to Mercer.
Thank you.
We looked at Mercer, but my son got accepted, early acceptance, into Georgia Tech, so we're extremely excited.
Nice.
However, I don't know what it's going to cost. What is up with FAFSA? It is a major debacle this year, and we don't know where to go. Who do you even appeal to say, how do we go forward? What's the next step? There's nothing. The schools don't know anything, haven't heard anything in the news at all. It has just been a disaster from – it should have been out in October, and here we are almost into April, and we still have no information on it whatsoever.
I share your pain.
It's so much easier to apply.
Yeah. So let me back up here, and we'll actually, you know, let me get to the punchline with you. So my kid had an event at Mercer this weekend, and they told all the kids that they can't even begin to give them scholarship and financial aid information, and they hope to do so after April 1st, ironically April Fool's Day, that the situation's supposed to be resolved, but they can't even guarantee that. And I was talking to a guy who's on the board of a very small college who said the college can't begin to set its budget for the coming year because of the FAFSA situation. And they need to know, for example, how many kids are going to be able to be on school campus with grants. So how many beds will they need? How many beds will be over? Are they able to close down a dorm and save some money there? What do they need to do? It's a very small school. And he said, we're about to see the eradication of a massive number of very small colleges in this country because of the botched FAFSA situation. It's not good. So I feel your pain, Tommy, on that one.
Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully they'll get this thing figured out quickly. I hate to lose out on some phenomenal schools, like I said. You know, it's so tough for the kids. You know, this is the start of their lives, and this is how it starts out. You know?
They're learning early. The government sucks. Thank you very much. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, you may not need this. I spoke a little bit about this last week, but I'm glad Tommy called in because it's not just me. This is a massive problem, and it is not getting media coverage. And it's one of those situations where it's such a huge story, and you can tell that members of the media may not have kids going through this life experience, that it's not a national front page news story. FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. Now, you can say to me, well, Erickson, my kid doesn't need student aid from the government. Doesn't matter. If you're going to a college or university in the United States that accepts federal aid for anybody, your kid, whether your kid wants the aid or not, has to fill out FAFSA. FAFSA determines grants. FAFSA, in some cases, determines eligibility for scholarships. FAFSA determines the future funding of colleges and universities around the country. And if your college or university takes a federal penny for anything, your kid going to that college has to fill out FAFSA. And the whole system is screwed up. The government, the Department of Education, decided to make it easier to apply. In the past, when I was going to college, was before the age of the internet. My gosh, does that make me sound old, doesn't it? Shut up, Philip. You had to fill out this long form. I remember filling this form out. I remember sitting at my desk in my home filling out this form, and then I had to get all my parents' tax information, and it was a physical form you filled out. By the time I was leaving law school, you did it online, and it was the same form, but you filled it out online. And you had to put all your tax information in. My kid actually wound up filling out the 2023 form before the 24 form was out. And the idea was they would roll over the 23 information to the new 24 information. And what made it, shut up. No, I didn't do it on a typewriter. I did it by hand. We didn't have computers back then either. So what made it so – what makes the new FAFSA form so easy is, like, on the old form that we filled out in 23 as kind of a trial run, I had to go get my tax information. And I had to put in all of my my 1040 form information. What was my gross income? What was my net income? What was my largest income source? And I had to fill out all this information for my kid. Because, you know, in America, we decide whether or not a kid can go to school, punishing them based on their family's wealth. If their mom and dad have too much money, well, then the kid has to go get student loans because they don't qualify for a bunch of stuff on their own merit. We base it on parents. It's the only time I think the government holds a kid accountable for their parents. But on the old form, you had to fill everything out. On the new form, you just sign an authorization and say, I authorize you to go to the Internal Revenue Service, federal government that already controls this, and get the information from the IRS to pull into the form. And your kid's Social Security number and your Social Security number are used to pull in all the information that you could possibly need. So you don't really have a form to fill out. You just check a few boxes and say, government, you're authorized to access the information you already have about me on file. It saves a lot of time and gets better information and cuts out all sorts of processes along the way. There's just one problem. It doesn't work. They've had years to put this together, and the system doesn't work. In fact, my kid did the FAFSA 2023 form, and then the colleges came back and said, hey, actually, you do have to do the 2024 form. We thought you'd be able to do 23, but since you're applying for 2024, we're going to make you do the 2024 one as well. The website kept breaking. The federal FAFSA website kept breaking and wouldn't save your data. You would log in, and you would start filling out the form, and then the site would crash. And your data was not backed up. So every time you went in, you had to fill out the information again and again and again. Once you got through the information and your parents had to, like, consent to their information, it would crash there. And you'd have to restart again. Well, my kid has done FAFSA. She's filled it out. We got all the authorizations done. Now there's a problem. The colleges cannot access the completed information. I take that back. So on Sunday last night at about I can tell you precisely because she texted me. Last night at 9:40 p.m., my kid got confirmation that the university she's applied to now has access to FAFSA so she can find out about scholarships and loans. But not every kid has yet been able to connect their FAFSA to the college. So we're ahead of some and behind others. It is a bizarre, convoluted system. The government decided to make it easier, and the process broke everything. Now, there's a larger issue than my kid being able to find out how much her mom and dad are going to have to help her pay for college, or is she going to need to get student loans, or will she get some scholarships, or will she get some grants? Every kid is through this. There's a larger problem, and it is the colleges and the universities. Colleges and universities need the FAFSA form process by April 1st because they're all, accredited. And all the accredited universities and colleges in America have to get their budgets done. And that process typically starts in April and is done by May, and it requires access to the FAFSA information, particularly smaller colleges and universities that don't have massive endowments, except there's now this new wrinkle. Sachs is one of the major accrediting agencies. I forget exactly what it stands for, Southeastern Accreditation of Colleges or whatever. You're no longer allowed for your financial picture for accrediting institutions to have your endowments considered. You have to actually look at the money you're coming in to be able to make ends meet, not your endowment. A lot of small colleges, universities had major endowments, and they could pull a little bit of money every year to cover budget shortfalls, and the accrediting agencies aren't letting them do that anymore. So they got a balance based on what they get from FAFSA. How much federal money are you going to get? How many kids are coming with subsidized loans? How many kids are coming with Pell Grants? How many kids are coming who are going to owe tuition, and you're going to have to help them get this, and you're going to have to make your ends meet based on your revenue stream, not your endowments. Well, colleges are going to have a lot of problems. And a lot of small colleges are going to go out of business as a result of it because they can't get the money. Now, you may be saying, well, survival of the fittest, no big deal, except there's a problem here. Because there are some colleges out there that are small but have massive endowments. And those massive endowments help them cover the costs. But the accrediting agencies aren't looking at those endowments anymore. They're looking at the bottom line revenue stream based on, among other things, FAFSA. And so these colleges look like they're going to have deficits, except every year they are structured to be able to pull money from endowments. Doesn't matter for the accrediting agencies anymore. So now compound this. You can't get your FAFSA data on time to be able to build out your budget to show the accrediting institutions that you are a viable concern. They're going to go out of business. I don't know about y'all. I got a scholarship to go to Duke. I wound up not going to Duke. I wound up going to my alma mater, Mercer University, where my daughter's going. It's in Middle Georgia. And my school that I grew up in overseas, my grade had at most 28 people. 28 people in my class. Now, our school only went through ninth grade there. We had to either go to boarding school afterwards or repatriate to the U.S. We wound up repatriating to the U.S. with the start of the Gulf War. And I graduated from high school. And my graduating high school class was one of the largest graduating high school classes my high school had ever had. 89 people. For reference, my father graduated from Coral Gables High School way back when, and they had an entire school for the senior class. It was so massive, or maybe the 11th and 12th grade together. It was massive, massive. I've seen his yearbook, and his 12th grade class was massive. Mine was 89 people. I did not want to go to LSU. I had plenty of friends who went to LSU, got lost on campus. I did not want to go to a massive school. Wound up getting a scholarship to go to Duke. Had a terrible experience touring the college campus there. It was very much a you need us, we don't need you. I wasn't comfortable with that already. One, I wasn't sure I wanted to be that far from home, even though it was Duke. And two, they weren't very nice people. And so we toured Mercer University's campus. They were super friendly. They were super nice. Gave me an incredible scholarship opportunity. The largest academic scholarship anyone in my high school in Louisiana had ever gotten. And off I went. And I met my wife, made good friends. For years, people were like, Mercer University, where's that? And then they beat Duke in the NCAA tournament during March Madness. And now everybody knows where it is. Irony of ironies, they're beating Duke. But Mercer is even a massive school compared to some small schools in the country. There are some schools that have 1,000 kids at most. And kids who want a college degree, but they can't handle a big school for whatever reason, it's good for them. And because of the screw-up with FAFSA, and by the way, this is not a Biden administration problem. This is a government problem. This process began during the Trump administration. It was planned out during the Obama administration. It's a massive government bureaucratic screw-up presided over by multiple parties. It's a huge problem. It hasn't been covered in the media, because that tells you everything you need to know demographically about where the people in the media are who set the agenda for the news coverage. But it is affecting not just a massive number of millions of families in this country, but a massive number of colleges and universities in this country. And you haven't heard about it because the media largely hasn't covered it. But it is a huge government screw up, a nonpartisan, bipartisan government screw up that is going to potentially put out of business a lot of small colleges in this country. And it is impacting a lot of students who are off to college who have no idea how much money they're going to need to meet their tuition needs. And they're going to have to apply for student loans at the very last minute. It is such a mess. And it's a mess brought to you by the federal government. And just think about this. That's not a partisan issue, but we have a growing number of people on the left who've decided the technocrats who have screwed this up need to have a greater role in your life. And a greater role in industrial policy and a greater role in setting economic policy in this country, such a disaster. No, we don't. Now, you want to set your economic policies for your business, and you want to have a great technical product. That's why you should rely on Vision Computers. They should have probably been in charge of the FAFSA rollout. It would have been screwed up. Vision Computers can build your computers for your home or your office. We built my kid a gaming PC. This is how I'm doing this endorsement deal, is we built a computer for my son. He wanted a gaming PC. I'm a Mac guy. I don't know anything about Windows PCs anymore. I used to. But now they're beyond me on what do we need for a gaming PC. So I went to Vision. It's like, here's what he does. They talked to my kid at the time. He was 14. So these are the games I play. They built him a gaming PC. He loves it. And he's got a phone number. If there's ever a problem, he can call. And Vision will take care of his problems, email problems, printer problems, you name it. They can do this for your office as well. And for just $179 a year, not a month, but a year, Vision can help supplement or take over your IT at your office, doing email support, printer support, remote connections, helping your company do upgrades, answering your employees' questions about their computers. Your employees need to be experts at their job, not experts at their email. Vision can take that over. Call them at 404-COMPUTE, 404-COMPUTE, or go to visioncomputers.com and let Vision start working with your company or build a PC for you for home or office. 404-COMPUTE or visioncomputers.com. If you call them at 404-COMPUTE and tell them I sent you, you get an even better deal.
You can follow Eric around on social media at EW Erickson on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And check him out at EWErickson.com. Get the podcast, live stream, email, and social media links by texting Eric to 33777 now.
Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. It's too late for the phone number. Y'all, I want to play you some audio. This is from Raphael Warnock. He is the senator from Georgia. Former reverend, I think he still does some preaching. There's a point here. Listen to this.
We cannot forget about the awful attack of Hamas on October 7th against innocent people, including Americans. We can't turn away from that. And at the same time, we cannot turn away from the scenes of awful suffering and human catastrophe in Gaza. And so we will continue to fight for a negotiated ceasefire. I have said very clearly that I think for Mr. Netanyahu to go into Rafah, where some 1.4 million Palestinians are now sheltering, would be morally unjustifiable. It would be unconscionable. And I hope that at the end of the day, cooler heads will prevail, mm-hmm. and that one day we can get to a two-state solution.
A two-state solution is an idea that progressives in the United States love and that the Palestinians have rejected every single time it's been offered. The idea that it would be morally unconscionable for Israel to go into Rafah to root out Hamas because of the number of people are there, you know what's morally unconscionable? Taking paragliders across the line from Gaza into Israel and murdering a bunch of people at a peace concert, raping women, chopping off the heads of babies, and putting a baby in an oven, all of which happened, all of which there were eyewitnesses to, all of which is denied by the left, denied by the Palestinians, because they never wish to acknowledge the horrors that Hamas inflicted on Israel, but constantly tell us Israel is not allowed to root out Hamas if Hamas uses people as human shields. What's morally unconscionable is for these Democrats to not be telling Hamas to surrender and give back the hostages to Israel. This would all be over. It's just remarkable they want to tell Israel was morally unconscionable and never stand up to the terrorists.
With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.